Good evening. It's 6 minutes after seven. This is the evening edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
The Rogers Historical Museum presents Hogwild, our area's love affair with the pig, on exhibit now through August 9th. This exhibit features the museum's collection and private collections, reflecting the broad appeal of the pig in Arkansas, from farming, sausage-making, art, and razorback memorabilia. Located in downtown Historic Rogers, 621-1154, or rogersarkansas.com/museum for more information. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith's 33rd season of entertainment presents the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Jazz Band and Jazz Cats tonight at 7:30, better hustle, in the Fort Smith Convention Center. This band and vocal ensemble will combine to perform vintage to contemporary high-energy jazz. Tickets and more information available at uafs.edu.
This is a special fundraising edition of Ozarks at Large. It is our spring on-air fundraiser. We're trying to reach our goal of $150,000, which we cannot do without your support. Our phone volunteers, who have been taking pledges all day long, have gone home for the evening, but you can still make your contribution now at our website, supportkuaf.com.
I want to emphasize that even though we often talk about large numbers during this fundraiser. Goal's $150,000. Morning edition costs $95,000. You can become a member of the NPR Society for $1,000. Smaller numbers are just as important. Every contribution works together to meet that goal. There is no minimum. We're not saying you have to do this amount.
No.
Or any, we appreciate them all.
No, absolutely. And I know sometimes people who haven't given before don't know how much to give. They ask that question, how much should I give? Well, you give what the station is worth to you. Maybe you only listen on the weekends. Maybe you listen every day. So you can make your contribution to be, you know, compatible with that. Sometimes we tell people, what about a buck a week? Do you think it's worth a buck a week? So that's $52. Or maybe a buck a day. That's $365. It's whatever you can afford. It's however much you use KUAF, and you are the only one that knows the answer to that.
And you might think about how much you use other things that you might have a subscription to.
Exactly.
Do you subscribe to Netflix or Hulu?
Mm-hmm.
Spotify?
Those are about $10.
So sure.
I actually
have, a month.
Yes, I actually had this conversation with someone the other day who mentioned, well, I use those things for $10 a month. And I know if I use the, you know, judged based on that, do I use the radio more or less than that? And that's how they decided how much to give.
There you go. And it's that simple. And the great thing is, we let you decide.
Mm-hmm.
So
we don't send you a bill
like
Spotify or Netflix or anything like
right.
that. We're not telling you have to pay $10 a month. You pay what you can afford and what you think this station is worth.
So what we hope is that you hear enough here that you think, oh, I wouldn't want to live without that. I wouldn't want to not have Terry Gross with me throughout the week, or Morning Edition, or Ozarks at Large. And so is there a value on that? Do you have that in your budget? Then we ask you to make that deduction and, you know, make the commitment.
Absolutely. And you can make that commitment right now by logging on to supportkuaf.com.
And thank you. This is Ozarks at Large. In about 20 minutes on Ozarks, why hundreds of people will be in Rogers this weekend to trade frags, sections of coral. That story ahead on Ozarks at Large.
First, the National Cemetery in Fayetteville will be getting a little bit bigger after 2 acres on the cemetery's northern side were acquired by the Regional National Cemetery Improvement Corporation. The organization yesterday closed on a purchase of undeveloped land between Hill and Government Avenues. Ron Butler, president of the RNCIC, says the acquisition is the latest in a series of land purchases for the National Cemetery.
We donated 2.3 acres last November in conjunction with Veterans Day and so on. And then the 2 acres, approximately 2 acres, we just purchased. And there were several other land purchases made, you know, back from 1984 on. So it's an accumulation. We've more than tripled, of course, the original 5 acres. So
Butler says the Regional National Cemetery Improvement Corporation is continuing on with the mission it originally set out on when it was formed 3 decades ago.
They recognized in 84 that the cemetery would soon run out of land. And had they not purchased that first plot of, I believe it was almost a full acre, it would have been closed at that time. They were down to approximately 10 in-ground burial spaces left.
Butler says through the help of local contributors from individuals, veterans groups, and businesses, the organization will continue to make sure the Fayetteville National Cemetery doesn't run out of room anytime soon.
According to the latest poll by Talk Business Arkansas and Hendricks College, incumbent U.S. Senator Mark Pryor, a Democrat, holds a 3-point edge over Republican challenger Congressman Tom Cotton. According to the poll, which surveyed more than 1,000 likely Arkansas voters on April 3rd and 4th, 45.5% voiced support for Senator Pryor, while 42.5% were supportive of Congressman Cotton. Libertarian candidate Nathan LaFrance and Green Party candidate Mark Swaney each received support from 2% of those surveyed, while 8% of poll respondents said they were undecided.
Voters in two Washington County towns will turn out to the polls for special elections today. In Prairie Grove, city residents will cast ballots at the First Baptist Church on whether the city should annex a strip of land south of town that surrounds the Highway 62 bypass currently under construction. Meanwhile, West Fork residents will vote for a new mayor at the Wenzel Community Center. Charlie Rossetti, the town's interim mayor, is facing Steve Winkler, a former weekly newspaper publisher. The mayoral race is being held after former Mayor Francis Heim resigned late last year. And the winning candidate will serve until the current term expires at the end of this year. Polls are open in both towns until 7:30 this evening.
A portion of Hill Avenue in Fayetteville is closed today while city crews install a trail crossing. The street will be closed from just south of Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard to Winstone Drive. The street expected to be closed through Friday afternoon.
The next dean has been selected for the University of Arkansas's Faye Jones School of Architecture. The university announced this morning that Peter McKeith will be taking the helm of the architecture school on July 1st. McKeith is currently a professor of architecture at the Sam Fox School of Design and Visual Arts at Washington University in St. Louis, but he has served on the Faye Jones School's Professional Advisory Board since 2011. McKeith previously held professorships and other appointments at the University of Virginia, Yale University, and at universities in Slovenia and Finland.
Mostly clear tonight. Lows will be in the mid-30s in northwest Arkansas. Lows around 40 for the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, sunny. Highs around 70. Tomorrow night, mostly clear. Lows in the upper 40s. This is Ozarks at Large. This afternoon, the legacy of an influential Arkansas-born songwriter will be shared on the University of Arkansas campus. Michael K. Honey is the author of the book Sharecropper's Troubadour. And this afternoon, he'll talk about the life and work of John L. Hancocks. Born in 1904 in Brinkley, Hancocks was an influential hand in the work of the Southern Tenants Farm Union and later became a noteworthy writer of labor poetry and songs. If you haven't heard of him, that's not surprising. He left Arkansas in the 1930s, and for decades after that was thought dead by many people in the folk music world. But he wasn't. This afternoon at 4:30, Michael K. Honey will talk about the life of John L. Hancocks and play some of his songs in Giffel's Auditorium in Old Main on the U of A campus. The talk is part of the Hartman Hotz Lecture Series in Law and Liberal Arts. Earlier today, Michael K. Honey came by the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about John L. Hancocks.
In 1937-38, a lynch mob ran him out of eastern Arkansas. And the only reason we know about him at all is that after he left Arkansas, he did a series of recordings with Pete Seeger's father, Charles Seeger, at the Library of Congress. And so those are still there, and there's a CD of those songs now from the University of West Virginia Press. But then he left the South altogether and went to San Diego. And Pete Seeger, Woody Guthrie, and other people put together a book. Alan Lomax put together a book of songs called Hard-Hitting Songs for Hard-Hit People about the Great Depression. John's got some great material in there, and they tried to find him in 1967 when that book came out, and they couldn't find any trace of him. They thought he was dead. And in 1985, I was a graduate student, and I was living in Washington, D.C., and we had these things called the Great Labor Arts Exchange, where we'd bring in musicians, and I organized a panel on labor and civil rights and songs of the South, and Pete Seeger was one of the panelists, and just right around that same time, he discovered John Hancock was still alive, and so we brought him to the conference, and he was a tremendous hit.
He would have been early 80s at this point,
he would have
right?
been, I think, about 84 okay. or something like that. And he was very stately and a little bit frail, but still pretty robust. And as soon as he walked in the room and started singing Roll the Union On, everybody burst into song because everybody knew that song. And he became a huge hit on sort of the labor folk scene. And he started traveling with Pete Seeger. He was at the Vancouver Folk Festival, which is a huge event in Canada, and various labor kind of oriented events for the next 7 years, and then he died. So he had like a second life. I call him, his first poems that he wrote were published in the Southern Tenant Farmers Union newspaper, The Sharecropper's Voice. And he used the pen name John Henry because he didn't want the planters to know his real name. John Henry being the famous steel-driving man of the great folk song. So in 1985, I called it the Second Coming of John Henry because he was that same kind of historical,
right.
mythological sort of figure.
Larger than life.
Larger
sort of.
Than life.
Was he writing, and maybe you asked him about this when you interviewed him in the 80s, did he write for himself, or did he consciously write songs that he knew would have a good chance of bringing people together, that would rally people together?
He was writing for the union. He wasn't writing for himself. Let me his first poem was called The Planter and the Sharecropper, and it was published under the name of John Henry and appeared in The Sharecropper's Voice. And it's a very long poem, and I don't think anybody who had not lived that life would be able to describe things the way he does. I won't play the whole thing because it's too long, but so I put a little tune to it. The planter lives off the sweat of the sharecropper's brow. How the sharecropper lives, the planter cares not how. The planter has good and wholesome food to eat. Sharecropper gets cornbread and fat bag meat. Sharecropper's wife goes to the kitchen, wash tub and field. Planter's wife enjoys a fancy automobile. Planter's children dresses fine and goes to school. Sharecropper's puts on rags and follows the mule. Oh, when a sharecropper dies, he's buried in a box without any necktie, without any socks. And if anybody doubts this ain't the truth, you can go down south and you can see the proof. Well, planter, what the heaven is the matter with you? What has your labor ever done to you? Upon his back, you just a sit and ride. Don't you think your labor gonna ever get tired? That song goes on at least twice that length where he's describing the conditions. So what he said to me was that even in oppressive conditions, people start to accept things as normal. So those things he's describing in the poem, he's trying to hold those up to people so that they can see that it may be normal, but it's not right.
Well, it's brilliant. It makes it personal very quickly. And I love the line to Planter, "What in the heaven is wrong with you?" I mean, think about, showing it to the planter as well.
Right.
This shouldn't be normal.
And right. Right. He was indicting the whole system and the planters who profited from it. And it was pretty obvious, I think, to most people that this was a very crass, unjust form of labor exploitation that was going on.
Michael K. Honey is the author of the book Sharecropper's Troubadour. It's about the life and work of John L. Hancock. He was on the University of Arkansas campus earlier today to discuss that book and Hancock's. It was part of the Hartman Hotz Lecture Series in Law and Liberal Arts. On an upcoming edition of Ozarks at Large, we'll hear much more from him, including more music and more about John L. Hancock's. This is the evening edition of Ozarks at Large.
You can hear great jazz right here on KUAF every Friday and Saturday night. Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, and my show, Shades of Jazz, can be heard Friday and Saturday nights from 10 till midnight. On Friday night, Daniel Estes steps in at midnight till 1 o'clock with Goodnight Jazz, and on Saturdays, it's Fred Hall taking in the midnight to 1 o'clock hour with Swing Thing. Tune in to KUAF for great jazz.
This is the evening edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And this is the spring fundraiser at KUAF, an annual event when we make it very, very easy for you to become a member of KUAF, to contribute and to support the programs you listen to, like Fresh Air, Ozarks at Large, and Performance Today. How easy is it?
It's really easy. Just go to our website, supportkuaf.com. Throughout the day, we have volunteers sitting in our conference room next to phones, and they're waiting for those phones to ring. However, at 7 p.m., we send them home, let them eat dinner or
do
rest,
whatever.
Yeah, whatever it is they need to do.
Right.
And we ask our listeners to go to supportkuaf.com. It's a very easy form, easy process. Doesn't take more than a couple of minutes.
I want to emphasize that you often hear us talking about different amounts to contribute and how much something costs. Like Morning Edition costs nearly $95,000, or our average pledge is a little over $100, or some people pledge $1 a day. And this is all true.
Mm-hmm.
Morning Edition does cost nearly $95,000. Some people do pledge $365 a year. Some people join the NPR Society and commit to $1,000 per year. However, and I can't stress this enough, every contribution is important. We don't have a minimum. We think it's important that people are able to give when they have that ability and in the amount they feel comfortable with, both when they place a value on public radio and when they look at their budget.
Right. And not only that, but we allow listeners to decide how they would like to pay. You can send us a check to 9 South School here in Fayetteville, just across the street from the Fayetteville Public Library. Or you can pay with a credit card or debit card in a one-time payment. Or you can, if you're a University of Arkansas employee, we can deduct a contribution directly from your payroll. Once or every month if you'd like to become a sustaining member.
That's right. I subscribe to many different things. I have a subscription, a daily subscription, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I have a Sunday subscription to the New York Times. I have a subscription to Cox Cable, to many channels. I have a subscription to Netflix. All of those have prices that come to me. Now, if I am out of town on a Sunday and that $5 New York Times is on my porch and I don't get to as much as I want, well, I'm still going to pay what I'm going to pay. At KUAF, we believe in allowing you to decide what it's worth you and paying. Truth be told, you don't have to pay anything.
That's right.
You don't have to. It will still come to you. But here's the deal. If you don't pay, you're not doing, and you have an ability to, the people who do pay are making sure that programs like Fresh Air and All Things Considered are here for you, because someone does have to. We allow you to decide, and then we pull it all together, and that's how we're able to bring you all the programs on KUAF, KUAF2, and KUAF3.
That's right. It takes one listener and one contribution added to the one prior to that,
right,
in order to get to our goals and to the cost of Morning Edition, like you've been talking about. Just one listener at a time. So if you'd like to make your contribution now, go to supportkuaf.com.
And thank you. Thank you. It's a long drive from here to the ocean, but the ocean has a strong hold on many people here. And Worlds Underwater in Johnson provides a chance to experience just a small bit of that vast world. Brandon Bell owns Worlds Underwater, and inside the soothing confines of aquariums, fish, and some of the most relaxing white noise you'll ever hear are some of the most colorful animals on the planet, corals. Bright pink, orange, and blue corals can be seen in a large saltwater tank in the middle of the store.
You got some big pieces. You also got some live clams. And then you'll see a bunch of little corals that are on little plugs, and we call those frags. And basically what we do is we might get a bigger piece of coral and fragment it into a smaller piece, making it more affordable. It's kind of fun to watch them grow out.
Those frags are an instrumental component for many hobbyists building saltwater aquariums. Some of the coral are expensive, and the fragments, smaller cuttings, provide a less costly way to include corals in home aquariums. After the frags have been attached to a rock, they'll continue to grow. Creating the frags is a simple process.
We have a diamond blade frag saw, and we cut up some pieces of it and just put them on these plugs here. So instead of buying the whole piece for $100, you're buying small frags of it for $20.
Bobby Melton has been working at Worlds Underwater for a while. He says the saw he uses to create frags is a pretty basic tool.
This is basically a wet diamond blade bandsaw. This thing will not cut your fingers. It's weird, but it won't. But when you put a hard coral against it, it just melts through it like butter. What I usually do is just, you know, take a coral out, have it in a container of water, have another container for my cuts, and then I will go around each individual polyped or however many I want to cut up onto, to put on a frag plug.
This weekend, enthusiasts from around the area and beyond will meet in Rogers to discuss and trade frags. Such a frag swap is not uncommon, and the one in Northwest Arkansas is expected to draw hundreds of people. Ricky Quarter is a member of the sponsoring organization of this weekend's frag swap, In Too Deep. He says seekers of corals for an aquarium can have different favorites, just like a gardener may favor different flowers or herbs.
There's stony corals, which actually build a stony skeleton out of calcium, magnesium, that kind of stuff in the water. The soft corals, like your anemones and zoanthids, don't have a hard skeleton inside. They're strictly a soft-bodied coral. They're another one. Zoanthids, for example, are pretty toxic. So when people frag those, they wear gloves, safety glasses, because they can actually squirt some poison in. You know, you can get it into a cut. I don't think it's deadly, but it can.
You'd rather not.
It can cause some irritation, maybe mess with your eyes. My eyes are important to me. So that's something to keep in mind as well.
Corals are animals, though that could be easy to forget. They don't have legs or visible facial features. Many are photosynthetic and gain their nutrition that way, though others do have tentacles to help obtain food. They generally grow in colonies and survive together, not as individual organisms. And there is no one general appearance. The color, some are neon hues of orange or blue. The shape and outright design varies greatly. Ricky Quarter says corals obtained from cuttings in local shops are popular with many hobbyists because that helps tamp down collections of wild coral.
Because you can frag corals and propagate them that way, then that prevents more wild collection of coral. So somebody can cut up a piece of coral and, you know, spread that around and you're not collecting so much coral anymore.
The show aquariums at Worlds Underwater show off just how imaginative an environment can be. Like almost any interest, the amount of money spent for setup and upkeep is left up to one's own desire and passion. If you're willing to invest a little more, you can create a scene that rivals, for color and depth, anything you might get on your big screen HD TV. Bobby Melton says certain lights can be installed to take advantage of the colors of the coral.
What we have on here are the Radeon Pro LEDs, where we can program them to mimic any color that we want. We can program the color of our sunrise. We can program the color of our sunset. They will simulate thunderstorms. They link up with the pumps, and the pumps can actually create it like a thunderstorm scenario when the lightning starts kicking in.
Saturday's Frag Swap will have experienced coral collectors and beginners, as well as vendors. Brandon Bell, the owner of Worlds Underwater, will be there, and he says people trading for or buying frags will not have a difficult time taking their new acquisitions back to their own aquariums.
And most of the people at the frag swap will probably just have a short drive or maybe a few hours. Basically, just pack them in a bag, maybe put them in a styrofoam box for you, and just drive them home, acclimate them to your aquarium, and should be good to go.
He also says, to extend the comparison to gardens, it's a good idea to do a little research into corals before buying, because some species are more aggressive than others. Ricky Corder says the organization In Too Deep offers advice at its webpage. That's In2Deep.org. He also says the group does more than just take care of their own aquariums and sponsor the annual frag swap in Rogers.
Another thing I wanted to mention about the club is that they also do community outreach. So Lifestyles moved into the old Jim Blair building up the road. And so they have a 1,000-gallon tank that's in there that basically came from Worlds. And so the club helps them maintain that tank. They provide, you know, equipment and supplies, and we can provide free labor. And it's a win for everybody, and it's a great opportunity for them and for the club both.
The Frag Swap is scheduled to take place Saturday from noon to 5 at Millwood Christian Church on Pleasant Grove Road in Rogers. You can learn more at the website in2deep.org. That's the number 2, in2deep.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
It is Tuesday, April 8th, 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Joining us now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Okay, so today is Kid Stuff Tuesday.
Kid Stuff Tuesday.
Because I'm not sure people have any idea how much stuff goes on at the local libraries.
So many things, and I'm often very jealous that I am not considered a kid who can go.
Me too. Wednesday, for example. At 9:30, there are Tales and Tunes for Toddlers at the Bentonville Public Library. At 9:30 and 11, Rattle and Rhyme Toddler Time at the Springdale Public Library. 9:30 and 11, Wigglers and Jigglers Preschool Story Time at the Springdale Public Library. Preschool Story Time at 10:30 in Rogers. Preschool Stories at 10:30 in Bentonville. Preschool Stories at 10:30 in Fayetteville. And a preschool art class for ages 3 to 5 at 1 o'clock at Crystal Bridges Museum.
You know, these all sound great, but I'm not sure I can afford to take my child to all of these.
They're all free.
Well, there you go.
And also free, there's an origami club on Wednesdays called Folding Friends at 4 o'clock at the Bentonville Public Library.
Bring your patience.
So check with your local library and find out what's going on, or check our listing and what's up on Fridays.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. This is Ozarks at Large. It's about 25 minutes before 8 p.m. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is KUAF's Membership Director, Lee Wood. You've had a long day.
We have had a long day, but that's how the fundraiser is, you know. It's fun.
That's right.
It's fun.
That's right. This is the spring fundraiser when people can make contributions to KUAF. Right now, during this hour, we encourage them to go online.
Absolutely. You can go to supportkuaf.com and make a donation and support the public radio station that you know you listen to every day and get this fantastic service from. And you can join a community of thousands of people who give contributions each year. Some of them give monthly, some of them give annually, some of them give every fundraiser. But the most important thing is that they give, and all of those people's donations together help us bring programs like Ozarks at Large.
That's right, or Fresh Air, or Performance Today. Now, true or false, you're the membership director, you will know this. True or false, it's just a handful of contributors who give most of the money.
Oh, false. Absolutely. We do have a leadership society that give gifts of $1,000 or more, but the vast majority of our membership give gifts, in the average, is about $120. It's that huge group of people that that really make this broad base of support that the station relies on. And we like it that way. You know, that way we're not dependent on a grant that may go away or a corporation that may decide they don't want to give to us the next year. It makes it very reliable, makes it stable, and it lets us know that the community that we're serving also appreciates it and gives back to us. So it's this great symbiotic relationship.
So we're not dependent on just one or two interests.
No, not at all. And it frees you up. I mean, that way as well, we get to go be a reflection of the community that supports us rather than maybe have to cover things that someone tells us to cover.
That's right.
We don't have to worry about that.
For the record, I've been doing this show for more than 24 years, never been told by any entity that you have to cover this.
No, and it's really...
A lot of people want us to cover things.
Oh, sure.
We think this would be interesting, but we've never been given a command.
Well, and that's the beauty of public radio. And, you know, not having commercials and being able to go chase down stories and cover things that we think are of worth to the community. That's what we're here to do. And I think we do it well, and the community lets us know twice, three times a year that we do it well. So it's a long week, but it's a fun week because we get to remind ourselves of that.
It is. You know, that is the thing, that there is this, now I'm going to get all Frank Capra on you.
Do it.
But there's this sense of community that we get. We do put in some long days, but you hear people excited about something they heard or something that could be happening.
Oh, yeah.
And there is this communal effort that when I was asking for money this morning on Morning Edition, someone from Fayetteville called in. I read her name. Someone else from Elkins who knew her called in. And you had this real sense of community.
Yeah, it's great. And then, you know, I was with the volunteers. Mm-hmm. The volunteers knew the people that were calling in, said, oh, yeah, that's great. It's good to talk to you. It changes the dynamic of the station because we have people from the listening community come in and help us. It's a fantastic time, and I really enjoy it. And I love raising money for this station.
SupportKUAF.com. If you would rather talk to a human being, wait till 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. But if you want to contribute right now, easily, safely, securely online, SupportKUAF.com.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you, Lee.
Thanks, Kyle.
Henry McLeish is a former First Minister of Scotland, former member of British Parliament, and is a visiting professor at the University of Arkansas. He has been coming to the United States for over 30 years, and to the U of A for 10. He's traveled to more states in the nation than many Americans, 42. McLeish spoke last month at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute on the role of learning in modern society, and he made comparisons between the United States and European countries. I spoke with McLeish prior to his talk last month. He says education is a passion of his and believes that in any country, education should be an absolute right because society, an economy, and an individual cannot prosper without education. He says there are significant differences in education between the European Union countries and the United States.
And if I take my own country, the United Kingdom, then clearly we have a different attitude at times, a different approach. And whilst I consider that some of your elite universities are quite simply the best in the world in terms of research, in terms of innovation, in terms of high-quality learning, I think that throughout America there's at times not enough investment in the public school level, which we do considerably more in the United Kingdom. But the key is this, that, you know, a mind is a terrible thing to waste. And quite frankly, it's the most renewable resource that we've got. I mean, people talk about energy and they talk about wind and they talk about sun. But at the end of the day, here's a generational resource that if we invest in, will pay huge dividends, not only for society, but for the individual itself and the economy. And of course, we live in a world where, I use the word advisedly, where there is a lot of ignorance. There's a lot of intolerance. So in terms of community, in terms of society, I think education is such a valuable role to play.
Well, you mentioned a mind is a terrible thing to waste. And without a mind, you wouldn't have, you know, wind energy and you know, all the things that you kind of followed up that statement with. I mean, you have to have an intelligent mind in order to come up with those innovative things.
Very much so, because health and education are key to a civilized society. Health is a right. Education should be a right. But also we talk about learning. So it's this important thing that often we talk about preschool, we talk about school, we call it primary school, I think it's your early years school, and then we have secondary and we have college and we have universities. But with that, there's a whole new era developing in terms of lifelong learning. We cannot, as a modern society, entertain the idea that we have to cut back on education. For me, education and health should always be sacrosanct in relation to cutbacks in resources, cut back in investment. If you cut back on health and if you cut back on education, you will not be the kind of society that you aspire to be.
What are some of the biggest differences between education in the United States and in Europe?
Often in the United Kingdom, we're criticized, for example, on healthcare as well, about it being socialized medicine. It's not a term of endearment that Americans use. We're also considered a nanny state, in quotes, and also a welfare state. But what we do is we have a different culture and we've evolved differently. But we actually just make sure that in cultural terms, education is for all. There are no barriers, class or income. Education is the key to a modern, civilized society. So therefore, we invest more public funds in education than as happens in the United States. And as I said, my perception is, and I never wish to be discourteous to my hosts, but I think the elite universities are a great deal of excellent community colleges, great deal in your public schooling. But I sometimes feel that in certain parts of America, the public schools are not invested in as much as possible. People think that, well, children will only be going for a job. They don't need to extend themselves in education. That's a wrong philosophy to have, because what I think all legislators must have, all people that want to inspire the public, they want to put education at the very, very top of the agenda. And that's, I think, the essential difference between the Scandinavian or Nordic countries, the Germans, Netherlands as well, and the United Kingdom. Education is such a highly prized priority, which requires public investment. And of course, in America, the kind of individual liberty, economic freedom issue means that sometimes the state is not welcome. Congressional involvement is not welcome, and it's often left to other people to provide. And when you consider the inequalities in the United States, there's a lot of people at the poorer end of the economic and social spectrum that need more investment. And at the end of the day, surely a society is civilized when it actually values every citizen to the same extent, invests in their education to the same extent, and allows them to realize their potential as individuals.
Overcome that income barrier, for sure.
Indeed.
You've been coming to the United States, you've been teaching here at the University of Arkansas off and on for 10 years. Why do you keep coming back?
I've been coming now to America for nearly 30 years. And America is an astonishing country, fascinating country. And sometimes I think it's a bit quirky in relation to congressional dysfunctionality. But nevertheless, it's a fascinating country to visit. And I've been very privileged. I have friends on the eastern and western seaboard in San Francisco and in terms of New York. But I have a lot of close political friends in Oklahoma and in Arkansas. And I've taught in both. But there's a special charm about places like Oklahoma and Arkansas. I have dear friends here. And when you can come and visit, you can see America, meet friends, and also teach and engagement with the students. That's an ideal mix for me. So I've enjoyed it in the past, and I look forward to many years in the future.
What's one of your favorite things about our area?
Well, I often get into trouble talking about food. But apart from that, I like the warmth of the people. The students are lively and engaging. And of course, because I come from a different culture, there are huge contrasts when we discuss issues like gun control, the question of the death penalty, the question of abortion, the impact of religion. So it's good to come to a nation where things are so very, very different. It livens the mind, it creates a partnership or an engagement with the students, and that is always very, very enjoyable.
Continuing to talk about differences, we're in an election year, and we're already in the heat of having, you know, these political ads, and, you know, it's made even national news, some of these, you know, slammings of gubernatorial candidates. And I know that you have run for various elected positions in the United Kingdom. What is the election? How is that kind of campaign process? How is it different in Arkansas and in the United Kingdom?
Well, this is one of the great areas which baffles me in the United States, the why the public and politicians want to be continually electioneering. You know, you have your House seats in Congress, it's 2 years, and you have your Senate seats for 6 years. But the great difference is that we just don't spend the money that you spend. I mean, in the United Kingdom, when I was standing for the Westminster Parliament in London, I would spend an absolute maximum of $16,000 for the whole of my election campaign. Two things. One is it's a short campaign of 3 to 4 weeks and it's all over. I think that would be very welcome in the United States. And secondly, there is a ban on people advertising on radio and television. And of course, when you get to the presidential elections in the US, where you spend maybe nearly $2 billion, I have to say with the greatest courtesy, that's an obscene amount of money to be spending. To what end? So I believe a lot of reform is required in the U.S. I think the two-party system is currently failing the United States. There's a lot of dysfunctionality. And I think a lot of people will tend to get disillusioned with politics if that continues. Now, politics is not brilliant at times in Europe or in the United Kingdom, but there seems to me that finance has got too much of a grip on United States politics. The idea of lobbying to the extent, and I always remember the Gettysburg Address by Abraham Lincoln, one of the 270 words, one of the finest speeches, and he said that government should be of the people, by the people, for the people. I don't think he talked about lobbyists at that point, and I just wonder at times who's been represented. And in fact, some of the illustrations I give when I speak to colleagues, they just simply cannot believe that America's wasting so much money in a system that often doesn't attract more than 50% of the population to vote, which I think is a testament to the fact that it's not working.
Right. Wow. You have served on Parliament. Do you remember your first day? What was your first day like as a rookie?
Well, in the House of Commons, I mean, the House of Commons, of course, has been sitting on that site in an administrative sense for nearly 1,000 years. So your first visit to Parliament on the first day you've been elected, to be elected as a public servant is a great thrill. But when you're in Parliament for the first day, and that was way back in 1987, I spent 14 years in London, you were overawed by the pomp and splendour of the Houses of Parliament in Westminster. And then, of course, you knew that it was a very different level of politics from city politics that I had been involved in before. But the great thrill, we have what we call a maiden speech. It's the first time you speak after you've been elected. And I spoke, I think, at 1 a.m. in the morning, because at that time we did overnight sessions. But it was just the thrill of speaking where Winston Churchill had spoken, and many other great parliamentarians. Not that I was similar to them, but there's just this great sense of excitement. So these were my first recollections of being in a big political place with people that had been there and who had been giants of politics. And here I was on these green benches and making a speech, whereas maybe 50 or 60 years ago, Winston Churchill had been making speeches at that particular time. So.
Yeah.
It was a great opportunity, great excitement. And that's why I think for people who are sometimes disillusioned by politics, being in public service is still an excellent thing to be doing. You know, for young people, for older people, that serving at whatever form is still a very real reward for the individual and a help to society.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you. Henry McLeish is a former First Minister of Scotland and former member of British Parliament. He is also a visiting professor at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large.
My lover's got humor. She's a giggle at a funeral. Knows everybody's disapproval. I should have worshipped her sooner. If the heavens ever did speak, she's the last true mouthpiece. Every Sunday's getting more bleak.
Some of my favorite songs in the past year have come from EPs. What I like about these shorter musical recordings is because they are only 4 or 5 songs long. I feel like artists put their best effort into the project and record songs that represent their best work. While a full studio album easily offers you twice as many songs, the extra music doesn't always come with quality. On some albums, you can tell certain tracks were just thrown together because the label needed 3 more songs to complete the project. What you're listening to right now is Take Me to Church from Hozier's 2013 EP of the same name. the Irish singer released his From Eden EP last month. Andrew Hosier Byrne was born on St. Patrick's Day in County Wicklow, Ireland. According to his Facebook page, the musician was raised on rhythm and blues, soul, jazz, and the, quote, deep dark stuff stretching from Chicago to the Delta, end quote. He joined his first band at the age of 15, taught himself to play guitar and piano, and studied music at Trinity College. While there, he was a member of the Trinity Orchestra. After deciding he wanted to write, record, and perform his own music, he dropped out of school to focus on that full time. The title track off his latest EP showcases his smooth, soulful vocal talent. His easy-to-listen-to voice slides gracefully along an impressive range of notes. The melody is a comfortably bouncy one that's so catchy you can't help but sway along. Don't you agree? Hosier traveled to the States and performed at South by Southwest in Texas in March, and the artist apparently has no fear performing in unique venues. His Twitter page displays a photo of him recording Take Me to Church with KXT Radio on a pedestrian bridge in Austin. His latest EP contains a live version of the song To Be Alone, which was recorded last year during a show at the Pepper Canister Church in Dublin.
Never feel too good in crowds with folks around when they're playing anthems of rape culture loud, crude and proud, creatures being all I've ever done is hide.
This song has simple instrumentation and really allows Hosier's voice to shine. To Be Alone is a bit more bluesy than the title track, and it's a little darker. But perhaps the most haunting song on the EP is one titled Arsonist's Lullaby.
When I was a child, I heard voices. Some would sing and some would scream. You soon find you have few choices. I learned the voices died with me.
Hosier's Facebook page asks the question, what are the 21st century blues and who shall we find to sing them? I think the answer can be found in Hosier's From Eden EP. The young Irish singer has brought his own style to the classic tradition of the blues, and he's brought that mix into the 21st century with him. Hosier's latest project is available now on iTunes. You can find out more about this artist at Hosier, that's Hozier.com.
Boys walking on empty. Is that the kind of way to face the burning heat? I just think about my baby. I'm so full of love I could barely eat. There's nothing sweeter than my baby. I'd never want once from the cherry tree. 'Cause my baby's sweet as can be. She'd give me 2 flakes just from kissing me. When my time comes around, lay me gently in the cold dark earth. No grave can hold my body down. I'll crawl home to her.
This is Ozarks at Large. KUAF is proud to co-sponsor the 2014 Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure. The 5K and 10K race plus 1 mile family walk will take place April 26th at the Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers. A pre-race pasta party will be held on Friday, April 25th. Registration, pasta tickets, and more information available at komenozark.org or by calling 750-PINK. And one note, an evening with Maya Angelou at Fayetteville Public Library has been canceled. That's because of health issues. Because of health for Maya Angelou, the event will not be rescheduled. I'm Kyle Kellums.
My name is Tanaka Grajeda.
We have just a few minutes here on the end of this evening edition of Ozarks at Large to remind you that this is the spring fundraiser for KUAF.
It is. Now, since last Friday, we've been taking calls and pledges online from our hundreds of KUAF listeners who have wanted to show their support for this public radio station, your public radio station. If you would like to show your support right now, you can make a financial contribution at supportkuaf.com. We've sent our phone volunteers home for the day. If you do have questions, they'll be back in the morning at 6 to answer those. But if you would like to take care of your contribution right now, you can do so just by heading to your computer or your smartphone or what have you, whatever electronic device will get you to the internet, and you go to supportkuaf.com and make your contribution there.
And every contribution does matter. It all adds up. That's the beauty of public radio, mm-hmm. is that you don't have to write a check for X amount. You write best what serves your purpose, your budget, and we put it together. We all work together to bring you the programs.
We do, and that is the public radio is a community, and we have this wide range of people who listen to us, and so we know that we have a wide range of pocketbooks, basically. People have different budgets, and so they know what they can best give to us, and it's through everyone giving what they can afford that we are able to reach our goal, which is $150,000 this spring, and it's by each and every pledge, just one pledge at a time, $1 at a time. There is no amount too small and definitely no amount too big.
No, I don't think there is. We have not met that.
We've not met that yet, so we'll let you know if we get there.
Right. And again, because our phone volunteers are gone for the evening, you can pledge online at supportkuaf. It takes a minute, and we do appreciate everyone who's called in. If you'd like to become a sustaining member, and that's easier for some people.
Yes, because you don't have to think about it. You sign up to become a sustaining member, and we will take that amount out of your checking account, or if you're a University of Arkansas employee, you can do payroll deductions, and you just say, I want to take, you know, $10 out a month until I tell you to stop, and then you don't have to think about it.
That's right. And it's so maybe it's $10 to you this month, but over the course of a year, you've given $120 mm-hmm. to KUF, so a bigger gift than perhaps you're able to give right now. But we leave all those decisions up to you. This is Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Pacola, Oklahoma. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We'll be back tomorrow at noon with another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large, right?
We will.
All right. Supportkuaf.com.
And thank you.